Well, it's time for the annual Bob Enyart Live Internet Telethon. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the Internet for another year. Help keep Bob's message going out to a worldwide audience, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. If you like the teaching, if you like the resources, if you believe that this ministry is valuable and necessary in a lost and dying world, please go to the KGov store, sign up for the monthly Bible study, buy some products, arm yourself with some of the best Bible teaching available on the market today. Keep Bob Enyart's message going out to a worldwide audience on the Internet for another year.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart. Welcome to Real Science Radio.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
I'm so excited, Fred. It's finally come, our annual list of evidence that contradicts the Big Bang.
Oh, wait a minute, Bob. All evidence overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang.
Well, that's what theoretical physicist Lawrence Krauss said on the show back in September. Overwhelmingly.
Overwhelmingly.
So, Fred, when we go through this evidence, this list of evidence that contradicts the Big Bang, let's not be picky. Let's not use little examples. Let's use big examples of things that involve like thousands or millions of stars and so on. And also, let's not use examples that contradict something one scientist thought up like 3 weeks ago. He says, you know, I thought the Big Bang would mean this, and lo and behold, I was wrong. Let's use things that the entirety of the Big Bang community would predict, and then they look at the data in massive observations, and they find out that, wow, we were wrong.
Yeah, in fact, one guy, Jim Pebble, stated, it's really an embarrassment when they found out that galaxy clusters are missing millions of years of collisions. What's that all about?
Okay, well, spiral galaxies, you know how beautiful they are? And we'll put a picture of one of the most beautiful on today's show summary. And in the middle of spiral galaxies, they look like pinwheels. And in the middle, there's a bulge. It's called the cluster. And those clusters, the theory goes, the Big Bang theory, is that these galaxies are billions of years old. And so in all that time, the millions of stars that were just formed randomly, they've been colliding.
Colliding with each other.
Of course, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what formed the clusters. They think the collisions caused the bulge in the middle of the spiral galaxies. So how did that first prediction there that we'll look at, how'd that work out for them?
Well, not too good, because they looked at them and they were shocked that they looked rather too perfect, pristine.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah, that's University of Texas Astronomy Department Chairman John Cormody said that these are pristine bulges that were something of a shock. We laugh all the time. It's constant.
Yeah.
A shock because they look too perfect.
Hey, you blow something up, is it going to look perfect afterwards? I mean, you probably blew up your G.I. Joe, right? Guys do things like that.
Didn't look perfect. Yeah, and so Princeton University cosmologist that you quoted, Jim Peebles, said it's really an embarrassment because where is the evidence of hundreds of millions of years of collisions? They looked at a lot of these clusters in the middle of these spiral galaxies. So we're talking about what, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of stars, and hundreds of millions of missing years of collisions.
So somehow these stars just got lucky and kept missing each other?
Well, that's...
Or could there be another explanation?
Well, Fred, I'd say that's a perfectly good rescue device, a secondary assumption. Somehow they have GPS built in to these random stars. Okay, that's the first evidence that we're looking at, the galaxy clusters that are missing millions of years of predicted collisions.
Well, another thing that's missing is billions of years of metal.
Metal.
That's a lot of metal that's missing. What's up with that?
Oh, yeah.
Is that like... where Detroit, you know, that's where they came up with the Mini Cooper? They were missing lots of metal in this.
Yeah. Now, when astronomers talk about metal, they don't mean metal like a geophysicist would mean metal. To an astronomer, metal is anything heavier, I think, than, well, you got hydrogen, helium, lithium, maybe anything heavier than lithium, I think, is what they would call metal.
Yeah, everything above that in the periodic chart, right?
Yeah, so it's not really metal, but to an astronomer, it's a heavier element.
Yep.
So, and the heavier elements wouldn't be created by the Big Bang, they say. So therefore, that's their story of chemical evolution, that stars, you had a first generation of stars, and they only had like hydrogen, helium, trace amounts of lithium, but then they exploded. And when they exploded, then that's how in supernovas you get the heavier elements. And then they explode again, then they form stars. It's sort of like the petrified trees up in Yellowstone, the 20 layers in one hillside. Then they form stars, and then they explode again, and yeah. So on.
Well, I remember before I even got into the creation evolution debate,
yeah.
Somebody told me that I evolved from stars. I was full of a lot of star material.
Yeah.
Thanks for the field of the star material. That hasn't materialized yet.
Right,
but
yeah.
Well, I was Lawrence, like, what is that all about? That was one of the things that got me interested in this debate.
Oh, wow. Well, remember Lawrence Krauss wrote on his book, I think it's on the cover, that Jesus didn't die for you, a star did. And that's their hatred. They do, most of these atheistic cosmologists, are not really just trying to be neutral. They have an emotional hatred of God, and we can see that in many ways. So they say that, well, stars, through the generations of stars, they gradually develop more and more heavy elements. They call it metal. So when they study galaxies, what do they expect to find? Well, depending on how old they say the galaxies are, they should find quite a bit of metal.
And they make a prediction of what they should find, and that prediction, was it fulfilled?
Well, typically, it's typical, right? And you could read this at realscienceradio.com. Look at our show summary. We'll also link to this issue at youngearth.com.
And you can get there at realscienceradio.com/Big Bang in the future, too, right?
That's absolutely right, Big Bang. And you'll find out that this is also reported by the mainstream science press, like at space.com. And so an astronomer at the University of Indiana led a study of 15 entire galaxies. Fred, we're talking about a lot of data. Imagine all the data from the millions of stars in 15 entire galaxies. So this is supposedly billions of years of stellar evolution. So this isn't looking at one little dot in the sky and saying, well, we thought that dot would be this color, but it was this color. And so the creationists are really having a belly laugh. That's not it at all.
Yeah.
So when you look at the big picture of this example, this evidence, we're talking about billions of stars over 9 billion years. Fred, they said that they're missing 9 billion years worth of metal in these spiral galaxies, the 15 that they studied.
Sounds like that prediction was a little off.
I think so.
Okay, Bob, how about superclusters?
Superclusters. You mean peanut brittle? The stuff that makes your fillings fall
out? Yeah, I was wondering about that. You know, maybe we can do an ad for them.
Yeah,
but no, seriously.
No, superclusters?
That's a lot of stars. What happens there?
Galaxy superclusters, like a lot of this data, some of it's newer, some of it's been known for decades, Fred. Forget about stars being gravitationally attracted to each other. Like the Bible says, the cluster of the Pleiades, the sweet influence of gravity, holding them together. Forget about gravity on planets or stars. We're talking about galaxies that somehow form superclusters, and these are enormous clusters. Fred, some of them, they're called, like, for example, the Great Wall, bubbles. Some of them form bubbles, filaments, the Sloan Great Wall. And so every time another cluster is found, and these will have millions of galaxies forming a cluster.
A cluster. And that Sloan Great Wall is a billion light years across.
A billion light years across. And every time I read an article in the science press where they've discovered another supercluster, they always say the same thing.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Or is it I'm embarrassed?
Yeah, that's
well,
right.
Well, they're surprised that, you know, gravity could pull them together in, you know, a mere 14 billion years.
Yeah, what they say is it's not possible. They say in a mere, that's it too. Yeah. The universe, it's less than 10,000 years old. We know from the scriptures, but also science disproves that it's old.
That's right.
In so many ways. So, Fred, they say, well, in a mere 14 billion years, that's what they say, gravity could not have pulled together these galaxies to form these superclusters. So that is evidence. That's a lot of evidence.
Yeah, again, think of the Big Bang. That's an explosion. You know, a random event. That's what they believe.
Yeah.
And somehow you're having all these great superclusters forming together.
Yeah.
So rapidly, you know, speaking in their time, it can't happen.
Right. And so they say it's not us saying it. It's them saying it. And so this would not be a prediction of the Big Bang that you'd find clusters, massive clusters in the universe, these superstructures that are greater than gravity would be able to form them.
That's right. So, Bob, there's something called a population 3 star. What's up with that? Because they're also missing. A lot of things are missing.
How much, over the years, how much have we discussed population 3 stars on this show?
Well, probably as much as we've found them.
Oh, yeah.
I think we found zero of them. So,
yeah.
You know, we probably actually have talked about them before, but not very much.
A little bit.
Which is more than they've found.
Yeah. So, for example, you could read about this in Science, the journal Science. And, Fred, I have a quote here from that journal. Quote, astronomers have never seen a pure population 3 star despite years of combing our Milky Way galaxy. So this is, we alluded to this just a few minutes ago. They believe the first stars would only have, you know, the lighter elements. And then there'd be a second generation of stars and then a third generation of stars. But only to make the public confused, they count them backwards. So the current generation of stars, I think they call those population 1. And their astral parents, they call them population 2. So the original stars that they think existed, they call them population 3. Well, they should have been able to find a ton of these things by now, and so far, they haven't found a single example of what they would call this is a real population 3 star, and that discourages them.
Well, this is a common theme here, missing, 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 missing. The next thing missing is a uniform distribution of Earth's radioactivity. What's up with that?
Well, radioactivity, where do, and people listening to this, even if they don't follow science much, they should be able to answer the question I'm about to ask. Where would the atheist, cosmologist, those who believe in the Big Bang and chemical evolution, where would they say the heavy elements were formed?
Well, thinking back to what we just talked about, probably the explosion of stars.
That's right. Supernovas blow up. They have a hard time with supernovas too. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Supernovas blow up, and then they say during the force, the pressure and temperatures that are involved then, which are extraordinary, then that's how these heavier elements would be created. Now, if that's true, that means that on the Earth, all the thorium on the Earth, all the uranium, that it would all have come from stars that exploded. And so as the Earth was forming over millions of years and it was a molten blob and it gradually cooled and all that stuff, as that was happening, the uranium and thorium should generally be mixed through the Earth. And so Lawrence Krauss, I brought this up with him, and he said, you know, but we predict that the uranium and thorium, for example, they'd be large atoms. Mm-hmm. So they would tend to float, and so you'd find them near the surface. So I granted him that. I said, okay, fine. But why is it that 90% of the Earth's radioactivity, 90%, almost all of it, is not only in the crust of the Earth, but just on the continents?
Just on the continents.
Yeah, the continental crust has 90% of the Earth's radioactivity. And you would think that it should also, if it really came from what they claim, it should also be under, for example, on the crust under the oceans.
Yeah.
And probably all through the mantle. Why is it collected as it is in the continents?
Just on the continents.
Yeah. I think they can't answer that.
No, they can't answer that. It tends to cluster near granite, right?
Near granite. And somebody we've heard of has a theory to explain why it's near granite.
Would that be a Dr. Walt Brown?
That's right. Fred, you and I did a show on Walt's origin of Earth's radioactivity.
It's an amazing, fantastic theory. I think there's a lot of credibility to it. Highly recommend getting the latest edition of his book.
Yeah, in the beginning. In fact, if people would like to support Real Science Radio, because without the support of our audience, we can't do the show. We depend on the audience. We don't have a large church behind us funding this. And so, Fred, we sell Walt's book in the beginning, and we also sell a wonderful CD set that Walt and I did probably half a dozen radio shows on different topics of his hydroplate theory. You and I did the one on radioactivity. There are shows with Kevin Lee on comets, frozen mammoths, and on earthquakes. It's a really fun resource, and folks could download it also right now. Start listening right away. But to support us in our telethon in this month of March 2013, if you call up or go online, just realscienceradio.com. Click on the store and go to the science department, and you can look for Walt Brown's book and the hydroplate theory and Walt Brown on the air, all the CDs.
Yeah, it's a great book. And if you don't have any creation material, it's not only is it a great starting book, it's a great ending book in a sense. I mean, there's so much detail in it, but it's laid out in such a fashion that if you're new to the topic, he does a really good job of going through things, you know.
He's a teacher. So bite-sized pieces of science. Fred, I've been
going.
And then
you can get details like in the footnotes, but he really presents very good arguments in a succinct manner that, you know, highly recommend it.
I've been going through that book with our boys, our three boys who are still at home, who are homeschooled. And I'm just having such a good time. We're just taking the bite-sized chunks that Walt has it in and just going through one or two of those each night. It's a lot of fun. The Big Bang would not predict, since all the uranium and thorium and other radioactive materials in the Earth allegedly came from when stars blew up, it wouldn't predict that 90% of all that would be clustered in the continental crust. But it is. So that is a piece of evidence, not only against the Big Bang, but against the whole chemical evolution theory.
That's right. So, Bob, there's something else missing.
What?
A center.
For the universe. Okay, what about that? Fred, do the atheists we've had on the show, and not all evolutionists are atheists, not all Big Bang proponents are atheists, but many of the marketing reps are.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the Darwin marketing reps, like P.Z. Myers and Aaron Ra and Eugenie Scott. And all
Richard Dawkins.
Yeah, and Jerry Coyne, and a number of them that we have sparred with or debated. They're atheists, hardcore. Michael Shermer. Also those who promote the Big Bang, like Lawrence Krauss, like Stephen Hawking and others. A lot of them are atheists. They believe. Remember Lawrence Krauss said on this show, he said, I don't believe anything. I don't have any beliefs. I let the facts speak for me. He's such an objective human being.
Does he really believe that?
He must. And so, Fred, he believes the universe has no center. Does he believe that based on the facts or based on faith?
It's based on faith. It's a philosophy. There's no evidence for what he believes.
It is absolutely a philosophy. And we quote many of the world's leading cosmologists and physicists who state unequivocally that the Big Bang belief that the universe has no center is a philosophy. It's a bias. And some of them, like Richard Feynman, he said, hey, it would be embarrassing to us if we found out the universe had a center. So that's why we're eager to say the universe has no center.
Yeah. Well, it turns out a lot of evidence has piled in over the last 20, 30 years that we do have a center.
Yes.
One of my favorites is the quantized redshifts. I know Dr. Humphreys has written quite a bit on that, and so has Dr. John Hartnett, another creation scientist. But they're not getting their data from creation resources.
No,
this is from secular sources.
Right. And many papers have been published in secular peer-reviewed scientific journals. And you know what we'll do, Fred, for this show summary? Why don't we put one or two photos of maps of the universe? Because they're working on that. Astronomers, cosmologists, astrophysicists, they've been working on mapping the universe, not our solar system. I mean, that's amazing. Not our galaxy, the Milky Way. They're mapping the universe where each pixel, each dot is a galaxy. And they've now mapped many tens of thousands of galaxies, and the map is not turning out as they expected it would.
It doesn't look like something that you would have from an explosion, A. B is, when you look at from our perspective, from our galaxy, these other galaxies, as you go farther out, they're lining up on concentric circles, essentially.
Yes.
That's the quantized redshift that
yes.
Humphreys is referring to.
Yes.
So what's up with that? It's like we're the center of a dartboard, and as you mm-hmm. go out from the center, these things are lining up on these concentric circles.
Well, here's what we'll do. In today's show summary, we'll post papers that have been published over a 20-year period from 1990 to 2010. And for example, in the journal Nature, that's the number one science Big Bang atheistic journal in the whole world. The Journal of Astrophysics and Astronomy in 1997, Quantized Redshifts, a status report, where they review all the studies that say, hey, look, this is not looking good for us because it looks like the galaxies have a preferred distance. It's like an onion, how an onion has layers in a sphere. And so as you peel the onion, you get toward the center. And so they're saying it looks like that's what the galaxies are doing, if that's true. Now, I don't know that it's true. It's looking like that's what the evidence is saying.
Mm-hmm.
It falsifies the Big Bang. The Big Bang is then false.
Absolutely.
Because the Big Bang does not permit for a center of the universe or for boundaries, for edges.
And you know what else it does? Doesn't it kind of show we have a special place in God's universe?
Amen. That is beautiful, because that then is consistent. Not that the Bible requires that we're near the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that.
Say that anywhere.
No, it fits the theme of the scriptures, in that God created the universe for mankind, for his enjoyment and for our enjoyment.
So you don't think like the Klingons or the Romulans who aren't the center of the universe, they'd be upset about that?
No.
So you?
No, I definitely don't.
Okay. So you don't believe in aliens?
No,
I don't either, but just checking, Bob.
Yeah. Hey, realscienceradio.com/aliens.
Oh, do we?
fun stuff on that, too. So, Fred, in 2002, a physicist, Russell Humphreys, did you mention him a little bit earlier? He's with the Sandia National Labs. He's a creationist. And so he wrote in a peer-reviewed journal of creation about all this evidence for the universe. And when you look at the maps that they're producing, they look like the universe is concentric spheres.
Yeah. Exactly.
They look like
it.
They
sure
look
does.
Like the onion.
Yep.
So who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? That's what the atheist wants people to think. They look at the map and they say, wow, look at that. It looks like you dropped a pebble in a lake and you know those rings that go out.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
That's what it looks like.
Yep.
And so then 2004, a paper at Cornell University's archive.org, 2006, 2008, Astrophysics and Space Science Journal from John Hartnett. 2010, University of Western Australia physics professor John Hartnett publishes. And it goes on and on, Fred. The evidence suggests that the universe has a center. That contradicts the Big Bang, but
Big
that's
time.
Not what Lawrence Krauss believes. He doesn't believe the universe has a center. So his belief...
It's a philosophy, again.
So he believes against the evidence because of his bias toward his philosophy, his godless philosophy.
That's right.
So his belief system is causing him to not honestly assess the evidence. He should be able to say, you know, there's a lot of evidence suggesting the universe has a center, but I'm holding out to say that it doesn't. When the map gets more complete, we'll see it doesn't.
Yeah, that's right. So the next missing thing, Bob, is spin. So we're missing spin.
How could spin?
Is this the no spin zone?
Yeah, must be. Our solar system, the sun is in the middle, and the sun has 98% of the mass of the solar system. So, Fred, I know that evolutionists try to explain why this is. The sun should have 98% of the spin of the solar system, because the sun has 98% of the mass of the solar system.
Yeah, and we know that from the law of conservation of angular momentum. The sun is the no-spin zone.
It seems
And that
to
is not good for the evolutionists.
Well, right, because if the solar system really was formed by a spinning nebula in space.
Something that's spinning, rather.
Gas cloud, like Descartes said back to Isaac Newton. Descartes said that maybe the planets and all and the sun form from some spinning gas cloud. And Isaac Newton said, you know, my system of gravity would not allow that this kind of system to form. It wouldn't happen. That was Isaac Newton's insight. He's what? Considered the most brilliant mind in history, other than God, that we know of.
Yep.
I mean, he discovers what? Color. He knows what color is, and he discovers...
Well, that's not that hard. I mean, that's blue, that's black, that's red.
Yeah, he figured out what makes it. Wavelength of light.
Yep.
And he discovers the law of universal gravitation, and he needs to do mathematical calculations, and there's no branch of math available, so he invents calculus.
Yep.
He's just this brilliant human being. And he looked at that suggestion. He said, no, I don't think that would work.
That would work.
In fact, he said the only reason the planets go like they do is because God set them in motion.
That's right. Like a merry-go-round and you're pushing it really fast. Mm-hmm. Well, when the kids fall off, they're all going to spin in the same direction. So there's another problem, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't Venus spin the wrong direction?
Oh, that's right. Venus has a retrograde rotation.
That's right. And so do moons of Saturn and Jupiter. They're going the wrong way.
These are all difficult for the big bangers. And so what they say, they have to appeal to catastrophe. They have to say, well, a catastrophe resurfaced that moon. Well, a catastrophe caused this moon. Well, a catastrophe caused Venus.
Was it a catastrophe that kept those collisions from happening in the first example we gave? Was it a catastrophe that made all those clusters form?
Yeah, right. You can't use catastrophe for all that, right?
Pick and choose when you're going to use it.
Yeah, so on
Earth, something else is missing.
What?
Time.
Time. Oh, yeah, we're out of time. Fred, can we continue? Because we have so much more evidence against the Big Bang.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Let's do it.
The sun should be spinning rapidly. It's not. That's evidence against the Big Bang. The atheists, they won't allow a single catastrophe on Earth, the global flood, but they got catastrophes every time they turn around out in space.
If they come here, it's a no-spin zone. If they go there, it's a no-spin zone.
That's right. Fred Williams, thank you. And so please remember, this is our telethon month. We really need your help to keep Real Science Radio on the air. Our website, realscienceradio.com, and our phone number here, 1-800-836-9278, spells out my last name. Coincidentally, it's another coincidence, Fred. 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. May God bless you.
Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Talking about.
Well, it's time for the annual Bob Enyart Live Internet Telethon. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the internet for another year. Help keep Bob's message going out to a worldwide audience, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. If you like the teaching, if you like the resources, if you believe that this ministry is valuable and necessary in a lost and dying world, please go to the KGov store, sign up for the monthly Bible study, buy some products, arm yourself with some of the best Bible teaching available on the market today. Keep Bob Enyart's message going out to a worldwide audience on the internet for another year. The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.